Do you like the Star Wars? Well, you've come to the right place. This is Jedi Cole here, along with my incredible co-host, none other than Eddie Medina.
Yes, that's right. A distant cousin to Greedo. A lot of people don't realize that, but
I thought that was you.
Yeah, that's right. Not much of a family resemblance because it's very far removed.
Very distant cousin.
Yeah, that's right.
He's actually probably more of an ancestor since he died a long time ago. And again, my apologies to you. You know, my condolences to your family on their loss of their ancestors and everyone.
Yeah,
I think
enough time has passed. I think it's safe to make the jokes now and all that. He was kind of like the black sheep of the family, actually.
Yeah, really. He was like the
green sheep of the family, actually.
When it comes to, you know, trigger fingers, butter fingers are not a good thing to have.
Yeah, quickly our family went into a completely different trade altogether after that incident.
Fairly so. So there you have it. Needless to say, with the invocation of perhaps one of the least successful bounty hunters, or perhaps a very successful bounty hunter on a very bad day. We're launching, if you didn't glean from the title, you know, we don't need their scum. This is our take on the bounty hunters of Star Wars.
You know, as you say that tagline, it just occurred to me how snooty the Empire is. Because think about it. It's like, you know, the scum, we don't need them. They said the same thing about the Rebels. I just put that together. You know, the Rebels scum.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, the Rebels scum. I mean, if you're not the Empire, you're scum.
I know.
It's kind of like Blade Runner. If you're not cop, you're little people.
If
you're not Empire, you're scum.
They're like the preparatory school of the galaxy.
Yeah,
everybody else is a public school.
If we were English, the Empire would be toffee noses.
Nice.
So that's for our friends in Europe listening in. So yeah, needless to say, that, you know, that's a good point. I hadn't really occurred to me as such either that. Yeah, they really are rather full of themselves in the Empire, at least their officers. But you saw that one guy that he's saying it to is kind of sympathetic.
Oh, yeah, really?
He's kind of like, gives like, oh, this again? I mean, really?
You know, he's probably...
I had to claw my way up through the ranks. My dad owned a diner on Coruscant across the street from that forearm creep.
Who couldn't keep his pants up.
Yeah. Yeah, at least Dad, you know, wore a belt, but somehow that guy got more business than us. Ooh, the Jedi eat there. Ew. Yeah, a lot of good that did him a year later, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
We actually started thriving after the Jedi fell. But yeah, it's a, you know, there's a low opinion of a lot of, I mean, naturally the Empire is going to have a very low opinion of Rebels. But
yeah.
You have to question, you know, was that just Imperial snottiness, or is there general disdain for bounty hunters?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You look at Dooku years earlier, talking about how the Geonosians don't use bounty hunters. They don't trust them.
Oh,
and like,
okay.
Yeah, like that's going to sway my opinion. I still think that you're probably part of this conspiracy, but yeah, sure, try to convince me by that. The bounty hunter came here straight to Geonosis. Just a beeline. He didn't come here to not get trusted, I'll promise you that right now.
Yeah, they want to badmouth the bounty hunters, but boy, they sure do go on a bent knee when they need their help to pull up the jobs that they can do.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, the bounty hunters serve a purpose.
Yeah.
They're the kind of the hired hands. You wouldn't normally hire these guys, but, you know, when you get right down to it, sometimes you got to hire them on. You got to bring them on
And I'm not sure, Cole, if you have the Blu-ray set or not, but there's a very specific scene that was cut from Empire Strikes Back that went in early on. that got cut because they felt, you know, it would be a little bit too it would come off the wrong way. But they showed you know how Sears had the imperial transport, right? You know,
yeah, the troop transport.
Yeah, they actually worked that into Empire Strikes Back. A lot of people don't realize they, you know, that thing was trucking along Tatooine, and they pulled up to the corner there in Mos Eisley, and there was a bunch of bounty hunters just, you know, standing there on the corner waiting for work. So they all jumped in.
Oh, they all jumped on. That's why it's not actually a troop transport.
No, it's
they're
not.
Okay, they just repurposed it for the tour.
They all just jumped in and they hired them for the day.
Wow, so really they're just day laborers.
Pretty much.
That's why I guess they stopped by a nearby asteroid and picked them all up, hanging out. There was Boba Fett and the gang just like hanging out, like you, and you, and the guy with the hood. Which, well, speaking of the guy with the hood, you know, Dengar. There was another cut scene that didn't even make it onto the Blu-ray. Apparently, it was recently found in the archives. You know, once Disney got a hold of it, they're digging through the archives.
Of course.
They recently released the scene where the original, you know, you see the guy says, you know, bounty hunters, we don't need their scum. And then you go to Boss, kind of, you know, trying to do his wombat impression. Blah, 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 blah. Originally, Kirshner shot where you then pan up and Dengar has that sort of the Indian from the commercials for not littering has the big tear.
The one tear
rolling down his eye. And it was really the softer side of bounty hunting that was lost to the ages, because Lucas felt that really didn't portray the bounty hunters in the kind of light that would, you know, sell a lot of toys and collectibles.
Plus, they couldn't get the rights to use the Hulk music for that.
That's
scene.
So true, yeah. And
the sad music.
That and
wow.
John Williams refused to try to write some kind of copycat score.
He was okay with the prequel music, though. I mean, you know.
Wow. But, you know, we all kind of had to be at that point.
Yeah, I guess so.
But, you know, the bounty hunters, it's one of those funny things where, you know, you have these characters that were just minimal background noise for the most part, apart from Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And then there's just this mystique about them. It's like the cantina. It's like Jabba's palace. They're just, it's one of those, the only points in the Empire where you really get a bunch of non-humans involved.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, there's some Ugnaughts, and supposedly there's a couple of there's a Snaggletooth somewhere on Bespin. They suited somebody up, but you never saw them. But you know, you've got Dengar and Zuckuss and Bossk, Boba Fett, IG-88.
Yeah.
And the rest.
Wow.
But you've got this sort of, you know, sextet of characters, if you will, that captured the imagination and have become phenomenally popular and rather iconic. You know, some of the iconic imagery are the Ralph McQuarrie bounty hunter arrangement, where apparently they all came to Bespin.
That was their class photo.
Yeah, took a group photo and then went their separate ways.
See, that they took that, and then immediately after they shot the group shot of the Bespin knitters, you know, the women who like to, you know, meet on Wednesdays to knit, you know, Lando new sweaters and capes.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah, that was picture day. That was club picture
day. Oh, club picture day. Uh-huh. I always miss those. And then there are several others. Like, if you look at the one of the more popular themes in the tops, you know, when they would do the Star Wars Galaxy art cards or any kind of art series.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the more modern advent of the sketch cards that would appear in card series. Inevitably, everybody does, every artist they hire to do sketch cards does at least one of the bounty hunters. And, you know, as a kid, those were amazing toys to get, especially because once you got the incorrectly named 4LOM in the mail or on the card if you missed out on the mail away.
Yeah.
It was so cool. He's like, it's tremendous value added. He had a whole, like, fake leather jacket.
Yeah.
Plus a thing to wear over that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dang, yeah. You know, and nobody else gets these fun things.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, he did have that little,
he had his little thing, like, of a chest style thing going on with the pockets and the flaps, and is his little, like, front end mud flap thing going on.
Mud flap.
Mud flap. And, you know, to this day, I'm still.
I just picture, like, a woman. You know,
oh, silhouette. Yeah.
Of a slave Leia.
I'm just waiting for that to see that come out after this episode. See somebody post that and, like, show up on DeviantArt or something.
I know. We want a cut of that.
That's right. So, you know, the thing about it is, the Empire Strikes Back kind of becomes synonymous with the Star Wars bounty hunter.
Yeah.
But you led the show in the perfect way by kind of reminding us there was already a bounty hunter that we'd seen.
Yeah.
And that was none other than Greedo.
Yeah. And Greedo was always one of my favorites as a kid. Although he gets a bad rap, there was something about either the design of his, the look, or the fact that here was a guy who had enough guts to go toe-to-toe with Han Solo.
Yeah, just confront him right there. I mean, that was...
Yeah.
Rule number one, you do not go and have direct confrontation with Solo.
And that's why I always thought he was so cool, because he almost had, like, that fearlessness to him, although it probably was more of, like, idiocy. But,
yeah,
it was
kind of a drunken bravado, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, he was probably out to make a name for himself.
I'm sure he was.
And if you bring in Han Solo... Mm-hmm. You know, you can imagine a sort of backstory, like these people hanging around, you know, like some kind of bounty hunter backwater meeting, and they're talking about, you know, telling tales. It becomes like a Quentin Tarantino movie, or a Trenton Tarantino, for that matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, just this Reservoir Dogs-style dialogue. They're all sitting around eating, and, you know, somebody says, you know, how you make your name in this business is you bring in Han Solo. And then, you get that sort of, like, diopter effect where it goes in and starts focusing heavily on Greedo, and he's thinking,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, where'd Greedo go?
Yeah, exactly. He's the first one out the door.
That's right.
He's the first one out the door. You know, that's the thing.
This isn't Throw Mama from the Train. You really shouldn't take these things literally. Crisscross.
Had he allowed himself a day to sleep on it and really formulate a better plan, he may have been a little bit more successful.
I think that was the point where there was an advent of a waiting period for bounty hunters.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a 48-hour waiting period. You had to, if you hatched a scheme, mm-hmm. you were then obliged to wait it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, once you were pretty sure it was workable. Plus, it's always important to have a plan.
Yeah.
And maybe even a partner. And I think that's what the actual Zuckuss was doing right with his mud flaps and his and his helmet bong and all that going on, was to have a backup in the form of a droid.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to bring this up because I like to try to... challenge people on their perceptions or what they read into things versus what mm-hmm. I read into things. When you look at 4LOM,
yeah,
what is the impression you're getting by the pairing of him with Zuckuss?
Immediately I thought of him as like a dirtier version of C-3PO, to be honest. But that's just probably me.
But if you look at the head of the droid,
uh-huh,
and then you look at Zuckuss's head.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of occurred to me that, you know, the body is roughly the same as 3PO.
Yeah.
You know, some of the chest area is a little bit different, but for the most part, they're using the same standard form.
Oh, yeah.
But the head is very reminiscent of Zuckuss's head.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it's almost like this would be the protocol droid or the type of droid that would be marketed to Gans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that makes
sense.
Or at
least the head of a droid that was once a Gan and is put on a taller body, because, you know, it would be kind of embarrassing to have, you know, a bunch of droids that are taller than everybody. Unless everybody else is like 4LOM size or taller, and Zuckuss is just a wee version of his race. But it's one of those things that it kind of struck me from the design standpoint, is I think that was really meant to suggest that where 3PO's head is an exaggeration or a caricature of a human head and face.
Yeah.
4LOM's is an exaggeration or caricature of a Gand face.
That's a really good point. And but although, you know, and that lends itself to let you believe that he's, like you said, almost like the sidekick or almost the servant.
Yeah,
Zuckuss.
I think that's why they're all often paired together.
But what's so interesting, and again, this comes from somewhere in the expanding universe, and
they're
not
also
as
often paired with a Merlot, by the way. It's a perfect pairing.
But he's got a little wine dispenser built into his torso.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah, he
just has a Merlot, Chardonnay, whatever you fancy at the moment. It just
but I
right
think
there.
That's a good pairing for bounty hunters. With go very well with Merlot or perhaps you know, a nice refreshing spring wine.
But somewhere in the expanded universe, it was mentioned that 4LOM is actually almost like a rogue protocol droid, where he actually rewrote his own programming in order to become like his own man, as it were, and to become, you know, a bounty hunter. So when you hear that, then he gets elevated from that sidekick status to more of like a you know, I guess, partner, an equal partner in crime, as it were.
That's true, and they do kind of suggest that that seems to be what they were hitting on in Robot Chicken.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there was one sketch in one of the Robot Chicken Star Wars of the of 4LOM and Zuckuss kind of like being roommates and partners, and they're kind of like, you know, anxiously awaiting the next big job.
Mm-hmm.
Or the next big Jabba. So then, you know, you go forward, you get bounty hunters a go-go, as far as you know, once you get to Jabba's palace.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's hard to know, and then the EU kind of fills in a lot of those gaps, exactly who's supposed to be what, but you do get the impression that there's a lot of bounty hunters hanging around waiting to be employed. And, you know, Jabba's palace ultimately becomes like the Kmart or the the gas station parking lot. Really, they're just waiting for the next troop transport to drive.
It's like the quick stop. That makes 4LOM and Zuckuss, Jay and Silent Bob, I guess.
That explains a lot, because if you listen real closely when Vader walks past him, you hear Zuckuss going, noich, 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 noich.
Which would explain the face bong that's built into it.
Exactly. Wow, it does make perfect sense now.
Oh, man. Well, somebody write that into the new EU.
Yeah, I'm going to see that on Robot Chicken next. You know? I guess it would technically be 4LOM would be Jay going, noise, noise, noise.
It's true,
and
true.
And Zuck is just kind of...
Yeah, he does
out.
Have kind of like that trench coat look.
Yeah, he certainly does.
Blood flap and all that.
And then you got 4LOM there recreating scenes from Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, let's... Mostly that on the cutting floor.
All right, yeah. File that away for a future nightmare.
We don't need to know if 4LOM's anatomically correct or anything.
That's right. Did he need to talk? Who knows? Who cares?
Wow.
So, needless to say, the bounty hunters...
After hours, everyone.
That's right. Welcome to Late Night with the late version.
Wow,
it's a night mood. But if you look at the you know, the bounty hunter mystique, I think really kicks in. I mean, Greedo was a bounty hunter, but we didn't really go as a fan culture bounty hunter crazy until the arrival of The Empire Strikes Back, really establishing a bounty hunter kind of community.
Oh yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And with such remarkable characters, like Bossk was apparently just sort of tossed together from spare parts. The actual costume, apparently Kirshner went around like, I'll take one of these and one of these and two of those, because the head is pretty much the head from the couple of reptilian,
they're in A New Hope.
Yeah,
the ones that are
in
like
the cantina, they just sort of gave it a mustardy color instead of the sandy browns that that those guys had. And the actual suit itself, I believe you actually see a spacer in the cantina wearing that same yellow jumpsuit.
Yeah, it was always reminiscent of like the X-Wing pilot suits to me. I always thought that, as a kid, I was fascinated with Bossk, and so I was always creating like their backstories, since we didn't get their backstories till later. And in my mind, I imagined him taking out like, this X-Wing pilot, and then like effectively stealing his clothing and almost like a trophy,
Yeah, and then when he washed it, his wife put bleach. And it came out all yellow instead of orange.
Yeah, his wife
and
didn't.
And it turned out he kind of liked it.
Exactly. She didn't. His wife didn't exactly have the same home skills as Chewbacca's wife did.
Yeah. Got it. And her floor soup was dreadful.
Exactly.
But it was
exactly.
Also made with Wookiees. It literally was like Wookiee floor soup.
I think what struck me is Bossk, why he was so cool and out of the. Obviously, Boba Fett is one that stuck with me, but out of the group of the B-list bounty hunters, he was always the one that I really was fixated on, and I think part of that was maybe in the back of my mind, he kind of reminded me a little bit of the Sleestaks, which as a kid, I was always terrified of the Sleestaks, obviously, because they would come out and they would make that creepy noise, and they were always in the caves and everything.
And that's something I want to see now, is like somebody cut together the... bounty hunters, we don't need their scum. Then you look out, there's Boss. And then kind of like they're about to pan over and then cut to, throw in some Sleestak.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and
I'd like to see that.
Then cut over to Dengar and just add the tear.
Gosh, you're fixated on that single tear, the single tear.
I know, it's just the tears of a bounty hunter. Actually, just one, singular, the tier of a bounty. That's all they'll spare, is one tier. But also, Bossk is the one who's ballsy enough to walk right up to the edge and kind of hang his toes over. Yeah, everybody else is like, keeping
that up. Always bothered me, too. I was like, scoot back!
Everybody else is keeping a comfortable distance. They're having kind of a professional decorum there. And Bossk is like, Vader is going to walk behind me.
Mm. Oh yeah,
that's how tough I am.
Yeah, he was kind of like the Trandoshan bad boy.
There we are. Thank you. I could not place that word.
Yeah, he. I like to think, because I would always make up these stories in my head of these characters. I always like to think that Bossk was so like ruthless and deadly that when he was hatched, he proceeded to immediately smash the other egg, so that way he would be like the lone survivor of his.
Wow, that's both dark and compelling. I'm impressed.
I can imagine him doing something like that.
I can see that happening as well. I never really thought of it that way. So.
I tell you, I was pretty obsessed with Bossk.
All I'm coming up with is a crybaby Dengar, but you got a kick-ass story there.
I always wanted to see the Bossk Boba Fett team up. Maybe it's out there somewhere. I haven't discovered it yet in the EU, but that was something I always wanted to see.
Well, if we ever get a chance to do a serious fan film, that's the film we're going to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's do.
As long as there's at least one scene of Dengar crying, I gotta have that shot in there.
I got it. Okay. We have a scene where Dengar is trying to hit on Ula or one of the other dancers, and
or maybe even like Ara Singh.
Yes. Oh, I love it. And then she just effectively just slaps him and just walks away, and that's where you get
the one tear.
That's where you get your tear.
And that was a good sort of entree into Ara Singh as well, because, you know, she talk about, you know, a bounty hunter just exploding in popularity. 0.8 of a second, all of a sudden, fandom is on fire for this bald-headed, spindly-fingered mystery chick. She just stopped by. You know, she stops in to watch the Boonta Eve challenge, and all of a sudden, she's like top of the myth. You know, she's like one of the top mythological characters of the entire expanded universe. How does this happen?
Is it the bad girl thing? Is it because we hadn't had that type of character in Star Wars yet, where we had like that the girl to die for type character?
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, I always assumed it was something like that, where it's like you had this mystery girl, and obviously she, you know, she lent herself to being deadly. You know, you weren't sure what her backstory was, but you had this attractive female who was just kind of there along the on the outskirts. So it wasn't like she was in the stands watching it. She chose to be away from the crowd, away from everybody. And you just wanted to know more.
Yeah,
and
she just had that air of mystery because she had like this quick shot, and then of course everybody jumps on it.
Immediately,
she's got like antenna coming out of her head.
Yes. I mean, you were excited to see Padme, you know, because of course Natalie Portman, she's attractive and all. But you know, all of a sudden, once is it Ara Singh? How do you say it?
Ara Singh. Yeah.
Ara Singh. Okay, I've heard it different ways. Ara Singh. Once she enters in for like her 2 seconds, then it's almost like Scooby-Doo. It's like Padme immediately becomes Velma and Ara Singh becomes Daphne.
Wow. Yeah, I guess that is one way to look at it.
But
I think it's also the bounty hunters themselves, just the concept.
Yeah.
You know, you have Greedo coming, you know, trying to collect the price on Han's head. Then you really go all in with the bounty hunters, and I think that's what got people, you know, really thinking about, wow, this is an aspect of the Star Wars universe that's very unique and different, and it you know, it's just an open door to backstory and you know, adding either you let it maintain its mystery, or you build on that mystery, and it opens the door to, you know, good and bad concepts as far as what constitutes a bounty hunter.
Well, you got more of what Ben was, you know, Ben mentions it's a hive of scum and villainy, and although the scum and villainy we saw in New Hope, you know, it was interesting, you know, you saw these different variety of aliens, and you saw like this dark, smoky, you know, cantina, and you wondered about all these characters that were popping on here and there. But it wasn't until the advent of the bounty hunter in full in the Star Wars saga that's where you thought, okay, these guys mean business.
Yeah.
It's like not only is Han, Leia, and everybody else on the run from the Empire, from Vader himself, that's already bad enough as it is. Now you have this. It's almost like a mad world where you got, you know, this whole group of
wow.
of bounty hunters coming after you. So it brings it all home, the whole scum and villainy concept.
Yeah, and it almost makes you wish that they had an extra hour for Empire Strikes Back so they could really, you know, show some of the other. I remember as a kid, you know, I'm what, 1980, so I'm like 15, going on 15. And I remember seeing I caught the bounty hunter bug, is of course, and one of the things that struck me is I was actually wanting to write I started like developing ideas for a novel that was going to be called Bounty Quest. I wanted to know what the backstory, what was going on with everybody, including Boba Fett. I wanted to explore. How does Slave One wind up in the trash heap, and why?
Oh, okay.
I wanted to go all in and work out all of the particulars, and you know, I remember like looking at any materials I could find to, influence that, not the least of which would be like the Topps trading cards.
Oh, yeah.
And in the scene with the Ugnaughts tossing 3PO's head around, you see what's obviously a pale white IG-88 head propped up against the incinerator. And I wanted to suggest that that was IG-88's head. I think somebody else later on did that, had IG-88 and Boba Fett square off at Cloud City.
That, I believe that was in Tales of the Bounty Hunters or Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah, one of the two.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so obviously, you know, I think everybody who saw that read that little bit of backstory into the mix.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it was, I think that's what we all figured we'd be seeing or would have seen if we had been given a chance to see the what went on. But, I, you know, I was... even working in things like Dengar having a pet Gundark.
Yeah, I think you mentioned this to me.
Oh, I may have mentioned that before.
I don't know if it was on air or what, but I remember thinking, that's brilliant. That would be brilliant, which would explain his scars.
Yeah, that's right. Mess around with that Gundark.
Yeah, it got pissed off at him one day and just went to town.
I mean, you know, house cats aren't intrinsically dangerous, but most people who own them have plenty of scars to show for it.
Oh, exactly. Actually, so, Dengar, it was explained in the EU that Dengar, the scarring, was actually caused by Han Solo. Have you heard this? You know, this little tidbit?
Well, the thing about Tales from the Bounty Hunters. Tales from the Bounty Hunters is a great example of why I never really liked the EU. And in this particular case, my big soapbox is, and I bought Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina. And I'm, you know, in all fairness, I've never read Tales from the Bounty Hunters, but I have heard from people who have read it, the chief complaint is, every single one of the six bounty hunters was intimately tied to Han and or Chewie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I remember that.
And it's been you know, show a little originality.
It's probably going on close to 20 years since I've read the books, but I think you may be right about that.
But, like, you know, so we're to believe that the six bounty hunters that answered Vader's call all happened to have had some kind of run-in with Han and or Chewie in their careers. And what that does is it undermines the price on Han's head because it makes it seem like that was always there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. I mean, you know, the price on his head was a fairly recent phenomenon by A New Hope.
But, you know, that actually makes sense now. Now that you've pointed that out, that whole connection to Han, because Tales of the Bounty Hunters was 1996.
Yeah, and Tales of the Bounty Hummers was a whole different.
That was Bird Gone Wild.
that was Bounty Hunters Gone Wild. And, I think that was only available online.
But, Tales of the Bounty Hunters was 1996, and I know back in 94 there was this small independent film that caught everyone's attention called Pulp Fiction. So I wonder if the fact that you had Pulp Fiction where you had different stories all tying together, I wonder if that somehow...
Oh, kind of inspired the...
Yeah.
To me, it's what I call young Sherlock Holmes syndrome. Because that, it's the first place I've ever encountered it, and it keeps, it's this chestnut that keeps getting revisited over and over and over. And that's this ridiculous concept that, you know, it's like Flintstones kids or a pup called Scooby-Doo. How many people have you ever encountered in your life that you yourself and everybody else that they know all knew each other before?
Yeah.
Most people I know didn't know me or half the people I know before they, you know, before we happened to meet at some point in our lives. But we weren't all like childhood friends.
That's a good point.
And that's really the reason I hate that, because it's just such a simplistic, sophomoric way of getting around a story. And this sort of unnecessary necessity to tie everything into Han is just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but yeah, thanks a lot, Kevin Anderson, for doing that.
Yeah. With apologies, Kevin Anderson, you know, you could do better. That's all I'm saying.
I did enjoy Tales of Bounty Hunters and Tales from Jabba's Palace and the Cantina one. They're fun, but yeah, you're right. It did kind of take the easy way out in that respect. And that showed up again in the prequels. Everything was connected. I mean, I'm going to use the one example that has to do with bounty hunters, and again, I'm bringing up poor Greedo. The fact that they made it they felt it necessary to actually show you a scene, albeit a deleted scene, where Anakin and Greedo are having a little fist fight in the streets of Mos Eisley.
And the thing about it is that was perfect example of why, you know, when people complained about like Disney excising the expanded universe, guess what, kids? The expanded universe never worked in the first place. I know this is going to upset a lot of people, but there was no continuity. Mm-hmm. Even though Lucasfilm tried to establish a timeline, if you look at things like that scene, that albeit a deleted scene from Episode 1, it is unworkable with the Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina backstory on Greedo.
Yeah.
Because Greedo could never have been on Tatooine to get in a fist fight with Anakin in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
Or alternately, if we take the films as canon, then the entire backstory that Greedo was given is completely undone. So either way you slice it, there was never a conscious effort to maintain a strict continuity.
Exactly.
Or at least until it was too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, that's why it becomes unworkable. And I think that's why, you know, for Star Trek, they haven't really tried to bother. Nobody cares. It's just each of the stories stands alone. They don't necessarily have to fit in. Most of them, you know, are informed by, or a lot of them are informed by actual episodes of the various shows. But I think probably a certain percentage of them are not informed by anything other than, you know, just telling a story that involves these characters.
That's a good point.
Fits the theme.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the bounty hunters became such a part of the mystique of Star Wars that that became a huge story arc in the Clone Wars series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the only point where I got moderately interested enough to maybe try to follow the series.
Yeah.
Though I did not manage to do that.
Well, Clone Wars gave us probably one of the baddest of the bad boys when it comes to bounty hunters. And you may know who I'm talking about, Cole, but for everyone listening, that would be Cad Bane.
So true. Yeah, that was your breakaway character. That was your Harley Quinn.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. He really was.
This is a character that I would not be surprised if that character got adapted into episodes 7 through 9 in some respect.
I would be very...
In the same way that Harley Quinn burst out of the animated series and into the comics.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's not an uncommon thing. one of their big force fails was the English-speaking boss. What, we suddenly can't afford to put... It's a cartoon. It doesn't cost anymore to put subtitles. It's all fake.
Yeah.
The subtitles are just as fake as the characters themselves.
That was my complaint about Zero the Hutt in the Clone Wars in the first story arc that was the movie release. Zero the Hutt doesn't speak Huttese. He speaks basic. And you pointed out the fact that it's like, why didn't they just use subtitles? Everything on screen is being generated by a computer. Why not just put some lettering up there, too?
I'm pretty sure that computer has a keyboard on it. Just download a public domain font, for God's sake, and put the damn subtitles. don't presuppose we're too stupid, or I don't want to read a movie. If I wanted to read a movie, I'd watch that Akira Kurosawa.
But yeah, Cad Bane, man.
The only character in the entire Star Wars universe, EU or otherwise, who is actually, I mean, granted, a lot of the, like they said in Clerks, Return of the Jedi was just a bunch of Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
But the only character was actually based on the Muppets lore was Cad Bane, who is, of course, based on Snake from the Muppet movie.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know. See, me, I immediately went to Lee Van Cleef from the Sergio Leone Spaghetti Westerns, from the Man With No Name.
Oddly enough, Lee Van Cleef himself was based on Snake from...
Really?
Not the character he played in the Spaghetti Western, just the man himself. Was actually based on... It took many years for the character of Snake to make it on a film.
Okay.
But Van Cleef himself bottled himself after that fictional character.
Yeah.
In hopes
yeah.
that one day it would be in a movie with puppets.
Uh-huh.
But if that's no indication that the whole thing is a complete farce, look up Snake from the Muppet movie.
Uh-huh.
And I think for the flavor art for this episode, I'll do the side-by-side that I did for Jedi Cole's Morning After a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather uncanny. They're practically the same character.
I can see it. No, I definitely can see it. As soon as you said it and it popped into my head.
They have the same hat.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They have both the... Okay, granted, Snake doesn't have, washing machine or dryer hoses coming out of his throat or anything, but, they're basically the same character.
Yeah.
And I think there was that one episode of Clone Wars where Cad Bane even said he kills frogs.
Here we go. I knew it.
Cad Bane, I kill frogs.
But
that's great, but we got a bounty we want you to hunt.
God.
Kill all the frogs you want when you bring in our man.
Just that's why he was Jabba's favorite, because he brought all the frogs.
Killed all the frogs he could eat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's it. But I love the look of Cad Bane. I love the big brim on his hat. I love the overall that westerny look that they gave him.
Well, he is very Lee Van Cleef themed, mm-hmm. in much the same way that Boba Fett was actually the design was to invoke the Man With No Name from mm-hmm. those self-same spaghetti westerns.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
That actually is genuine. I don't think that they were consulting the Muppet movie when they came up with Cad Bane.
Yeah, let's hope not. But
they may well have been.
You never know, though. I mean, there was a connection between Jim Henson's, group and Lucasfilm, but the look of Cad Bane is awesome. The fact that he has twin blasters. Now I know in this day and age of over the top cinematic action orgies, every character in the world has a gun in each hand. But with Cad Bane, it almost seems natural that he would take that route where he would have a blaster in each hand.
Absolutely.
It kind of completes the whole image of what they were going with him. And the other thing I loved about Cad Bane is that he's a Duros.
Yes.
And before now, there was nothing intimidating about that
exactly.
species. I mean, they were just hovered off into the corner of the cantina.
It would be like casting Peter Lorre as the bad guy.
Yeah.
As an action hero.
I mean, because the Duros up until before and then was just, they were like the giggly schoolgirls cantina. They were just off the corner giggling to each other.
I never really thought of them that way, but it is so true.
Nowadays, if Lucas still had the rights to Star Wars, he would come out with yet another special edition where those two Duros would have, cell phones in their hands, texting each other,
That's right.
Giggling.
Do you like me? Check yes or no. What a sad existence for the Duros.
I know, exactly. But they took that species that you weren't afraid of and made it intimidating and...
Well, it sort of suggests it doesn't matter, what species you are. There's probably some really friendly Trudoshians, giggly Trudoshians,
Oh,
or
yeah, it's true.
whatever they're called, and Rhodians, you know,
The Trandoshans, there's
Trandoshans, and
that one that.
giggly Rhodians, and what have you. There's probably, evil ones as well. So
Well,
it
yeah, I'm
did
sure.
allow you to sort of expand your horizon. Like having an Ithorian Jedi did. It's sort of like, oh wow, yeah, I guess I could do more and just sort of sit in the corner and make weird noises, like calling humpback whales or something.
See, and Bossk had a brother, Reginald, and Reginald, went around with
Reginald?
Reginald. He had khakis, and he wore a sweater tied around his neck,
Of course.
glasses, and so yeah.
Reginald.
Reginald
With a name like Reginald and you're of that species, then you're pretty much that you're bound to grow up that way.
Yeah, actually, and it's still not explained. At Bossk, he did smash all the other eggs. Somehow, he
He
overlooked
missed.
Reginald's egg.
Well, I think
Yeah,
when he
he
was
missed.
doing his smashing, one of them kind of rolled out of the nest. And Reginald was actually raised by farmers or something, you know.
He was raised by the Imperials. He went to the same prep school.
Oh, that's right. That's why that guy had such a low opinion of them. Is that he had gone to the same school as Reginald, and he'd heard all about his brother Bossk.
Why hasn't Lucasfilm hired you and I to
I
write
know
the
this is a, it all it just writes itself, really. That Bossk had a really bad reputation through Reginald when they were going through their preparatory school, and he looks up like, oh my, here's his brother. Are you kidding me? It has to be him. No boots,
Temple
stinky
protector.
feet. Yeah.
A stinky.
Reginald was right. He is scum. But then he made the mistake of sort of that elitists do, and that is to lump everyone under the same umbrella. I'll give you that Bossk probably was scum, at least according to Reginald. But does that mean everybody else? Should he be judged by the company, or should they be judged by the company they keep? They don't even like him or know him. They're all showing up for the same job.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because this jerk is there at an audition doesn't mean that everybody else the audition is a jerk too. So, think about it before you make Dengar weep.
Exactly. Oh, here we go. I'm totally gonna make a customized figure of Reginald, the Trandoshan.
I know that I'm just like, man, I'm all of a sudden gonna be looking on eBay for one of those 12-inch Hasbro Bossks, and then maybe like some kind of
Ken figure.
Yeah, like Ken or what was it, the Backstreet Boys figure or something like
That's even better.
that.
Yes.
Make a
Oh
bunch of
my
little
gosh.
sandals for Reginald. Seems like the type of Trandoshan who would wear sandals.
Yeah, I think so. Or Uggs, or no, I guess that would be the just for girls. I don't know. I don't know. I'm we've
how
gone
do
so
you,
far off the deep end. I don't
yeah,
even know
I think at
anymore.
this point, yeah, Trandoshans, it's irrelevant. They all like the Uggs. It doesn't matter, male or female. It's all about. It's all about comfortable footwear when you get right down to it.
When they saw Leia wearing her Uggs on Hoth, they thought,
yeah.
"Oh, well, we like that."
Yeah, that's a nice look.
It
I could
is.
rock that.
We can't recreate her hairstyles. So we
Actually,
must
though,
copy her footwear.
the thing that is probably the appropriate footwear would be Crocs.
That would no. Well, I don't know about that. That would be like us wearing human-skinned boots or something, wouldn't it? It would be a little bit too Hannibal Lecter-ish.
Perhaps. I thought maybe they were just made of rubber or something, but yeah.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
I don't think that. Yeah, I don't think Crocs are actually made of like real reptiles.
That makes sense. And again, we've gone so far off the deep end. My mind is somewhere completely else.
And then you've got, other bounty hunters like, the origin of Boba Fett being a clone of Jango Fett.
Uh-huh.
Which is, kind of a questionably simplistic origin story, but there you go. The damage is done.
It's simplistic, but at the same time, it speaks volumes to how good Jango was that they would use him to create a whole freaking army based on his genetic makeup.
I get the impression he was the only one who signed on for the deal. Especially since he was getting kind of maudlin in his old age, he was like, he was coming to the point in his career where he realized he just wasn't going to have time for kids, so what does he do?
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, he figures that cloning is a good way out, and he kind of crosses paths with Sifo Dyas about the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, he's like, we're looking for somebody to clone. I'm looking for a clone. I can't afford it. Tell you what, if we can clone you as a fee, we'll give you a clone child.
Yeah, that must have been such an odd meeting, him and Sifo Dyas, that they first met, that he would approach Jango and said, I'm looking for someone to be a surrogate father.
Yeah, I think it was probably one of those things where, it was just like conversations overheard in a bar.
Yeah.
And then whether or not you have the willingness to butt in on them.
Good
and
point.
Like, yeah, I could overhear that you need somebody to clone, and kind of needing a clone, so you can, work it out. here's my card. So, yeah, it just kind of went from there.
Uh-huh.
It was a really awkward existence they had back in those days.
That
really,
was.
In many ways, the Empire straightened a lot of things out.
Yeah, they weren't
frank.
So bad after all.
Yeah, It's like the Romans in Life of Brian. The more you talk, it out there, apart from all the good stuff they did, they're really just a bunch of tyrannical overlords at the end of the day. But also, as bounty hunters go, of course, Jango Fett is almost interchangeable with Boba Fett as far as costume elements and such.
Yeah.
And, even with the advent of Jango Fett, Boba still is the iconic one. Like, if you did a monochrome image of the helmet, unless somebody was really shrewd and was scrutinizing and saying, well, there's no dent, that must be Jango, most people are going to just assume that that's Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how iconic the character is. Then you have, to the point where, now there's the... where I'm going to have to go all Green Arrow here and go, Walgreens, you have failed this city. Because I can't find a stinking prototype Boba Fett Walgreens exclusive action figure from the Black Series anywhere in the Dallas area.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, they're appearing at Walgreens all over the country, and there's this tantalizing little... But, the fact that I'm obsessing over this stupid action figure of a version of Boba Fett that nobody ever really got to see, is suggestive of the power of the bounty hunters on the popular culture and on fandom.
Mm-hmm.
But Boba Fett's helmet is so iconic that it was the subject of one of the I believe it was Make-A-Wish Foundation. The helmet projects were done for at various celebration events.
Uh huh.
And sadly, I have lost most of my photographs, unless they're on, I'm actually going through old discs from the camera I was using at the time, but I got pictures of nearly all, if not all, of the entries to the Boba Fett helmet thing that was done at Celebration 6.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to see, what people were doing with
that
iconic helmet, but, mm-hmm. you see that the Boba Fett character being utilized in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And it's just so amazingly iconic. And then you kind of go down the list of bounty hunters, and each one in their own way has some sort of presence out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but you know, Boba Fett's pretty much king. as far as, you know, the marketing angle, or the non-movie out in the real world fandom aspects.
We could probably do a whole episode on just the Fets themselves.
I'm sure we will at some point. This is a good springboard for that, because we really want to give the bounty hunters their due. You've got, I'm drawing a blank on her name, that tried to assassinate Amidala and failed miserably, and then there was Fett.
You're talking about Zam Wessel?
Zam Wessel, yes. I cannot conjure that up. But yeah, you've got Zam Wessel and Ara Sing, and you've got the cartoon bounty hunters, the Go-Go. Mm-hmm. And according to backstory or collectible card games, etc., you have a large quantity of various bounty hunters peopling Jabba's palace.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the bounty hunters are literally all over the place. Certainly Boba Fett is a character nobody wants to let go.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, quite frankly, only Captain Kirk got a more pitiful death. No, actually, Boba Fett got a more pitiful death than Captain Kirk.
Yeah, I would say so.
And that's why I'm willing to say...
He got a more pitiful death than even Greedo.
Yeah. And I'm willing to let that go. If people want to bring Boba Fett back from the grave, I'm all for that. I'm willing to accept that, because there's no way that was the death of Boba Fett.
No, no.
You know, that would be like, you know, Butch and Sundance being holed up in the surrounded by Federales, and they're like decide to have a snack beforehand and choke on some peanuts and die. Some sort of accidental asphyxiation instead of in a hail of bullets in one final stand.
Uh-huh. Now, it wasn't ever...
It was just that pathetic.
They never showed them die on screen, so you never know. They may have made it out.
That's so true. Yeah, and Elvis is still alive, so... He and Boba Fett are going to be releasing a new album.
Oh, yeah, is that it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That should be interesting. That's an interesting one.
But, you know, in so many ways that, you know, like I said, Boba Fett's king. He became the iconic character of The Empire Strikes Back, more so than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And
even more so than Ice Cream Maker Man?
Ice Cream Maker Man is a very close second.
Oh, okay. That's good. I can live with that. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Ice Cream Maker Man has a very loyal following. But Boba Fett trumps Ice Cream Maker Man in sheer marketability.
Uh-huh.
Because literally anything that's ever been made Star Wars, there's a Boba Fett within that line.
Yeah, that's true.
Or slave, if not Boba Fett himself, Slave One.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Whether it's a Pez dispenser or
the baseball even with, like, caps.
There's always a Boba Fett something
bottle
part
opener.
Of your choices. Yeah, bottle opener. That's true.
You know, rubber ducky.
I missed that one.
There may not be one, but if there isn't, yeah, there will be.
That's the other custom I need to make.
Exactly. Or more importantly, the hand-carved Duck Dynasty Boba Fett decoy.
Yeah.
Specifically designed to lure in ducks that are fans of Boba Fett. But also, I mean, you look at Boba Fett, whose first appearance is one of the only highlights of the holiday special.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets in the action figure realm, has had figures or statues made of him in the actual on-screen costumes.
Yeah.
In the animated version.
Mm-hmm.
And in the prototype version. And in the Macquarie concept design version.
Mm-hmm.
So there's literally just no end. You can, you know, you can have this very squatty Boba Fett holding a bowl of candy for you at Halloween. You can have a backpack that is either Boba Fett invoking or looks like his backpack, looks like his jetpack. You can have a, you know, the even the iconography of his costume. Like the his scouting patch. Which he got for bounty hunting as a Boy Scout.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. That's actually his merit badge. You can. There's even a like an ice cube tray with that's Boba Fett helmets and the so-called Bantha skull motif alternately. A Boba Fett hoodie that you can zip up the hood.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty good one. I like that.
So you can be like Boba Fett, who can't see where he's going. There's just literally no end, and I think that, that Boba Fett is, you know, right up there with Darth Vader and Ice Cream Maker Man is like the top three most iconic characters.
Yes. But I got to point out, his first appearance, his first public appearance was not the holiday special. It was actually at that county fair parade that they had in California?
Oh, yeah. Well, even before that, the costume was premiered in Bantha Tracks.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay, okay. So that predates even the parade.
Yeah, because there's an image that that shows there were like some. Of course, that was printed in black and white, but the it showed like the flamethrower mechanism.
Yeah.
Fully extended. I've seen some color pictures, you know, where it's extended. They've added in the flames. And they actually had like a thing that showed you exactly, you know, what all the component parts were. Like, you know, this is like you're supposed to have like these, you know, dart knee darts or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think that was where they first rolled out the character. But
okay.
Actually.
What? I guess at the county fair would have been like his first appearance as in character, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, as appearing as a character.
Yeah, the official fan club had introducing Boba Fett. He's got climbing spikes, knee darts, tools.
I like to know what happens if those knee darts accidentally go off.
It happens to a lot of guys.
I didn't mean it that way.
I couldn't resist to taking this back to After Dark.
It just seems like such an awkward knee dart. So it always seems so awkward to me.
I just always saw it as like, I don't know, like if some guy grabs you from behind, the other guy's coming up to punch you in the stomach, you kind of knee dart him.
I guess.
And I guess ideally the guy who's holding you is so shocked by the fact that his friend got
knee darted.
That's really the absolutely only use I've yet found for knee darts. Other than the fact that it's fun to say.
He's just knee Boba Fett's just the Swiss Army knife of the bounty hunters.
He really is.
Everything tucked away and everywhere on him.
Knee darts.
Bottle openers and Wookiee braids and everything else on his.
Yeah, he's
person.
Got like he's got one of those slide rules in case he encounters any calculus.
Exactly, and a little compass just to say.
You never know when you're going to be called upon to draw a circle with a specific radius. So that I think we're going to see for your school supplies next year, probably some the Boba Fett compass is what we're going to be looking for as the next marketable Boba Fett item. And I think with the Boba Fett compass in mind, we should probably bid adieu to the bounty hunters. And in fact, I think we have found that we do need their scum, or at least we do need them. They can keep their scum. And we will be back in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense, and in 1 week with another live show at Deep Elm on Air at deepelmonair.com. We're,
yes.
Of course, coming to you through the auspices of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can check out the Jedi Cole Universe YouTube page. We now have our own YouTube feed with mostly a bunch of ridiculous video selfies for now, but we're going to get a lot more stuff coming up down the pike. And just a whole slew of other things. And Eddie, we can find your art and artwork in addition to at various conventions around the area.
You can find me at eddiemedina.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and everywhere else. And I also want to point out, if you do follow us on the live show, which you should be, at dbellamonair.com, one thing I'm trying to push with people who I know listen to the show is we want you to use the chat option. There, when they're on the main page, as the show is streaming live, we would love for y'all to get on there and chat, as you won't be able to chat directly with us, but we'll have somebody, either Colleen or Catherine, somebody will be monitoring the chat as the show's going on. So,
in fact, on the last Hey Kids Comics Live on just this last Saturday, we actually had the a live chat message come through that was conveyed to us from Jansen.
Okay.
So, yes, if you do send live chat messages, they will be imparted to us.
Yeah.
And we would be happy to both repeat them on air and answer them as well.
Yeah, yeah. So please use that option. Just be as interactive with us as you can manage.
Or if you feel so inclined, do feel free to call in as well.
There is that also, yes.
We do have that option. The phone number is on the screen. We do enjoy hearing from people calling in. So you do have some options. Do check out the live show, please, and do interact with us. And we will have some more Star Wars fun in a week and in 2 weeks in various forms. So we hope to see you there.